This episode of Yes But Why Podcast is brought to you by Audible. Get a free audiobook download and a 30-day free trial at audibletrial.com/yesbutwhy. Over 180,000 titles to choose from for your iPhone, Android, Kindle, or MP3 player. Download your free audiobook today at audibletrial.com/yesbutwhy. Amy Jordan, and this is Yes But Why Podcast. Yeah.
The weird thing about me is I'm into podcasting about podcasting because this industry changes so much that I have to keep on top of it for my own sake and for my clients that ask me on the occasion, yeah, to help them start a podcast.
So tell me about that. You consult other people to do podcasts? Don't give away any advice on this. I don't want you to lose your money, but, you know, what's that like? How does that feel? How'd you get into doing that?
It feels great. Yeah. Funny enough, I got into doing that because when I started this podcasting journey, also when I started writing books, I had no one. I had absolutely no one. So it's my way of giving back, with a fee, of course, but it's my way of giving back, especially when these podcasting systems don't do well with the disabled. They just don't. So that's my way of giving back.
So you mentioned your books. So I want to go back. I usually like to start at the beginning of a person's life. When did you know? So you write books. So when did you know you liked storytelling? Like,
well,
when did we first do it?
When you're in the first grade.
Six?
Six. Yeah, six. And we'll get into why I say six on the podcast.
Okay, we're in it. Let's do it.
Yeah, let's do this.
No, we're talking right now. This is the podcast.
Oh, so I got into writing when I was 6 years old because my brilliant teacher gave all her class, you know, those blank books, they're white. The white, little blank books. And she said, you could write a story about anything you want. And so I, of course, wrote a story about a pilot, of all things, a pilot. And I typed it on my computer. Yes, I had a computer in the classroom, a big honking Apple II in the classroom with a printer. No, the printer wasn't wireless. No, it was a big honking piece of assistive technology that my parents bought and essentially gave to each year that I was in, except for sixth grade. I think I got rid of the dang thing when I was in fifth grade. So back to my first grade story. I had to write this book, and me being, and I still have it quite well, I should probably show it to everyone in the show notes.
Yeah.
And after this podcast, you know what, Amy, I'm going to take a picture of it.
Please send it to me. That's so great.
Show notes.
Yeah.
So that is something I learned how to do when I was 6 years old, and I still have it, and I fell in love with not journalism per se, but being a published author at young ages was pretty cool.
Yeah. So you said when you first started writing books, you didn't have anyone to teach you how to navigate the process. tell me about that first process. Like, you're writing, you know, for fun, maybe. Are you? And then all of a sudden you're like, I'm going to put these stories together and make a book. How did the first one come together for you?
Well, the first one came together after I had a tragic loss in my life. Of course, the first grader in me wanted to go back to writing books, but the older adult in me said, well, you can't necessarily write a book as a minor because legally it's tax deductible money and you have to put it on your parents' taxes or do your own taxes. So I kind of had to wait until I was 23, but that was a good thing because I had...
Thank God you know tax law. You're great.
I figured I looked it up somehow.
Yeah.
I looked it up. I mean, I knew I was setting myself up when I was 17, and I knew I had this book on my heart. And so I looked it up somehow, and it said tax deductible money, and at the time I was a minor, and I'm like, no, I can't do that yet. So I weigh it, and then I had a tragic loss in my life because I lost my mom, my biological mom, to meningitis / a leaking brain aneurysm, and I, after she was in a ventilator coma, I said, can I write a book? Can I write two books? Actually, I planned two books sitting in the ICU saying, I love you, Mom. I love you, Mom. I love you, Mom. Making her mental machines go quiet. And so she said yes to the first one, as long as you do it gracefully, meaning don't spill too many family secrets, and then you can move on to the next one, which will be a novel, which will have no family secrets in it at all, because it's a novel. And so by the time we all said all goodbyes, I was on a mission to publish a book. Then I said, I'm going to spell this word for your audience, just in case they're listening with kids. I said, F-U-C-K, I'm going back to journalism school. I looked at my mom on August 11th, 2010, and I made the decision in my heart after she made the go-ahead to write a book. F-U-C-K, I'm going back to journalism school. And so I don't know whether it was a grief moment or what, but I have been in journalism school since 2017. I'll be done with that in May of 2020.
Now, that's a different kind of storytelling than you have been doing thus far. How do you find the education? Like, is it still about storytelling, or are there different kinds of things that you're talking about?
It's still about storytelling, but one thing that I will tell you is journalists are not allowed to put down opinions in the story. They call it putting your bias in the story, whereas in a fictional novel, you can make up to kingdom come. And it's like, okay, really hard to learn these journalism skills. And I got bit in the butt with one today on Twitter, which I'll probably on the podcast on Thursday, and why I did it, and I at least know that when I made this mistake, I knew what I was actually going to get into. I wasn't living under a rock. So at the same time, learning the roles of journalism is completely different than having creative freedom in a nonfiction novel.
Hmm. That's really interesting. I mean, like, I know that rule, you know, that rule makes sense. Of course it does. But, you know, just talking about it as a sort of style, I can't imagine it's going to be really difficult, especially when you start, you know, with sort of a memoir and then, you know, lead into even a more creative story than that. How do you then strip out any of the opinion and then just tell the facts of the situation in an interesting way? That's got to be wild. Do you have to do a lot of, in your journalism school, because I don't know anything about journalism school, do they give you a lot of assignments to do a lot of writing to get you into it? Or is it more reading other people's?
My school is unique in a sense that my school is the Academy of Arts, by the way. And by the way, I think of as of next week, and I am allowed to announce this, we're starting a public-facing podcast for the Academy of Art in San Francisco. So, yay, the Academy of Art will have a public-facing podcast feed. Hopefully, we can get students in the door for that. And so students will learn about the amazing program. And I'm not kidding when I say amazing, because they make us think as if we're real journalists. I mean, right now I'm doing what they call a featured story on speech dictation. I did a piece on mental health. And so they make us do real world stuff. And so all homework is real world stuff. And of course, if it wasn't great, it would be real world stuff. It will be real world applications, I should say.
Yeah. Wow, that's really awesome. Now, you say your school is unique. Is that because you have heard that other schools don't have, these sort of real world projects?
I'm saying my school is unique in two sets. One being my teachers must work in the field before they can apply. It's not like you can apply to be a teacher and teach at a journalism school. My school has very, very strict standards of their teachers, and I learned that one the hard way, too. And so my school also is a English-speaking school, meaning that the international students have to speak English, although we do have aides in the class for those who can't. But primarily, it's an English-speaking school, and that is one of the rules. But the coolest thing about my program is we collaborate with all the programs. Let's say if you're getting a photography, I'll use your husband's degree, audio engineering, which they do have, by the way.
Nice.
Let's say if you're getting audio engineering degree, you might be put in the class with a fashion journalist, and the stylist end of it is mixed in with the fashion journalist end of it. I'm finding a lot of fashion styling students are mixed in with me. So it's not all together locked as fashion journalism. It's all together a variety of viewpoints, a variety of degrees, and that is something I love about this program.
Oh, that's really great. And that way, too, you get to test out different kinds of writing to figure out what you want to do once you graduate.
So, yeah, exactly. Even though, and our program, not to scare you guys, our program is one of the top quality fashion programs in the country. So a lot of fashion styling students come to us. And I asked that. I said, why are so many fashion styling students in my classes? I just asked it out of curiosity. And inside source, who's now the director of my program, thank you very much, she used to run the PR at the Academy of Arts. She goes, Lynn, we're one of the top programmers in the country. I'm like, oh, that makes sense. Because I said to myself, why is, like, two fashion journalists in the program and all the in the different classes and all the rest of it are fashion styling? And then when she said that to me, it made complete sense.
Yeah, I mean, why not? Just because you're a fashion journalist doesn't mean you don't want to be the best fashion journalist, right? You never know. That's super cool.
Yep.
Now, do you think that you'll stay focused? Well, I don't know. I say stay focused, but you've worked on like a kabillion different kinds of projects. What do you think is your, I guess, focus? Like, what do you think it is that you're going to continue to do as when you graduate and everything?
If a newsroom doesn't accept me, and I say that with my full heart, because fashion columnists are fairly hard to come by, and because my degree is so niche-oriented, I am not the typical journalist that goes into, let's say, broadcasting journalism, which is a bigger niche than mine. And so if a newsroom says yucky patchouli to me, which I hope they don't, I am going to start probably an audio fashion column and I just came up with this idea the other day, because I want to use my podcast and my degree.
Absolutely. So but you already have a fashion podcast, right?
Yes, but no.
Yes, but no.
It's more about CP than it is about fashion. I wish I could get my disabled friends to be fashionistas like me, but haha, I can't. I can't. That's
no, right
the hardest challenge. That's one of the hardest challenge, because clothes are not designed for the disabled. I mean, I'm wearing leggings and an exercise top as we record this podcast. So me and leggings are best friends, but cute leggings are hard to find.
Interesting. Now, you have so many different podcasts. Do you think, like, you create an idea and then build a project and then get to the end of it and move on to the next? Or do you like having multiple things going on at once and juggling them all?
I like having multiple things going on at once, because I am the type of person that has creative person syndrome, meaning that I cannot be stuck doing one project mindlessly for about a good 2 hours. I need to be writing, I need to be podcasting, I need to keep myself stimulated. And that's how the brain works, which, by the way, did I mention I have ataxia spastic cerebral palsy?
Yeah, that's true. Maybe you should mention that.
That's true. Maybe I should mention that. Oops.
Yeah.
So ataxia spastic cerebral palsy is a lack of oxygen at birth. And because of my girlfriend's cerebral palsy, she and I, after 8 years of creating content based around cerebral palsy, decided to do a podcast together called The Diary of a Fashionista. And I said to her, hey, would you like to have a podcast of your own that I assist with? So essentially, I make myself co-host. And she goes, that would be awesome. She's assistant with my other podcast, Ask Win, for 4 years now, almost five. By the time this episode comes out in July, it will be 5 years. And so she's assisted with organizing and scheduling and people power. And then I wanted her to see the other side of the coin. I was also being a little spoiled brat, because I tell you why, I wanted to understand her better, because she had, she still has a very heavy speech impediment, and due to her cerebral palsy, which we'll get to in a minute, and how she got cerebral palsy. And this is public knowledge, so she doesn't mind me talking about it. And so I was a spoiled brat, because I, as her BFF, I wanted her BFF of 15 years plus, thank you very much. I wanted to understand her better. So I convinced her, and she knows it after the fact. I convinced her, I disguised speech class, what they call after school speech class, for those of us in special ed land, as a podcast. And I told her after the fact, I said, you know, this is speech class. She goes, really? It's the firmest speech class I have ever done in my life. And so I said, okay, let's keep it up. And so she knows what she's doing now.
That's really great. And it helped her out, and it made her, you know, have an easier time communicating?
Yeah. Yeah, well, she still has the speech impediment. The speech impediment, like mine, will never go away.
Sure.
The speech impediment will never go away. And because she and I have the, she has acetoid cerebral palsy, I have ataxia spastic cerebral palsy. And because she and I have a child's disability that now we are in adulthood with. And the surprising thing is, Amy, is a lot of their websites, because I know this because I looked, are geared towards new parents who just had their kiddos diagnosed. And my God, that's the scariest thing ever. And luckily, my biological mom did not have Google, otherwise she would have been on the floor crying in a ball of mess. So because of the way I was raised, and because of my mom did not have Google, she did not have the smart speakers, which you can yell at, and she did not have the Apple iPhones. It's my way of giving back to the newly diagnosed parents, and it's my way of saying, yes, you can make it to adulthood with cerebral palsy, and yes, you can have interventions of the yin yang, and yes, look at Danielle and I, we made it to adulthood, and we're not half bad either.
Yeah. You're pretty solid members of society, putting out all sorts of stuff. Yeah, I mean, I think that's really great, too, especially when it's like you go online and you're like, there is no resource for me to see other people in the world living full lives. What a great thing that you put out there for any other people who have CP, so that they know, I can do this. Other people have done it, and I just need to keep working, you know, having the speech class, or, you know, just trying to be confident that you can leave the house and do what you need to do. You're pretty great. You do all sorts of things. You do way more than me or pretty much any of my friends do. You've got so much going on.
Yeah. Thank you for saying that.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, you're a machine. I like that you call it creative person syndrome, too, like the inability to stop.
Someone gave me that title out of Australia, and on his podcast, he goes, you know, you have creative person syndrome. I'm like, no, and he teased me. He said, well, that also stands for cerebral palsy, too, so you can use that if cerebral palsy gets to win.
Sure. Yeah, absolutely. Well, I mean, but you've got so many ideas and you're so interested in, you know, all sorts of different things. So I think it's, you know, there will never be a time when you're like, no, I don't have any new projects in my mind. You're like, no, I got 40,000. Which one can I do right now? Like, how do you keep track of everything?
I don't. It's my schedule. It's my schedule that...
Oh, yeah, and Danielle, she helps you with stuff.
Yeah, it's Danielle, and it's my schedule, and I just hired in as a VA. And so, yeah.
So you got, like, a team. That's great.
Yeah. Basically, all I have to do is host the podcast. I walk away from it. Danielle does all the uploading. Danielle does all the scheduling. So I walk in as a podcaster with little, I know I should do more research. And yes, you guys, after journalism school, I'm going to do more research and check my facts and make sure everything's kosher. And so, but.
It's a wild world.
The wild world. But I can't physically edit a podcast. So that's why it comes in all naturally. I don't have the muscle strength to edit click buttons in Audacity to edit the podcast. And I had to mention that publicly. A fan of mine said to me, why don't you edit the podcast like the rest of us do? I said, I physically can't. It's not because I don't want to learn the software. It's because I don't have the muscle strength to click the buttons and do the editing.
Yeah. Plus, like, I love the idea that you have a team. I mean, the hardest thing for those of us who are doing, like, podcasts at home, you know, is doing all of that stuff. Like, it's great that my husband's good at audio, but he doesn't edit my podcast. I do all of the editing for my own podcast, that kind of thing. But I love that you have a team. I think that it's great. And I think that, you know, more people should have a team, you know, because it helps you focus on the part you're going to do and not get overwhelmed by the business. I find that a lot of times the thing that bugs people when it comes to podcasting is scheduling and sound editing. So the fact that you have people helping you do that just means that you can be in a better frame of mind to talk to all of your guests.
Yes. And then I don't edit the podcast because Danielle and I don't have the muscle strength to edit the podcast. It's not like we're lazy millennials that don't want to learn. It's because our disabilities prevent us from doing it.
I like how you're, like, defending that you're not a lazy millennial. You're hilarious. I don't think the word lazy is anywhere near what you are, my dear.
Yep.
So you also have a team in your publishing world as well, right, for your books? Or are you self-publishing? Do you have, like, a literary agent and all that?
I am. Right now I'm self-publishing. And then with my 10th book, I am trying to get a literary agent. There we go. And so because of the masquerade ball in the literary agent traditional publishing field, I have to play my cards carefully. I have to write something that sells, obviously. And then I have to do it in a unique perspective. So what I've decided to do is not self-publish my 10th book. I sent it to my editor, and she is now working on a query letter and working on the stuff for the traditional publishing world.
Oh, that's awesome. That's cool. Yeah, I figured if anybody needs a literary agent, it's you. You're so busy, you need a team for everything, and, you know, you might as well get a literary agent. Especially, are you saying 10th book, meaning 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 books that you've written?
Yes.
You're a wild person. How does a person write 10 books? Are you Stephen King? What's going on?
Speech dictation. That's how a person writes 10 books. Speech dictation and editors to help.
You think that's the key?
I use speech dictation. I can't type. Listen on.
Of course, but yeah, I wondered how you accomplished it. I love the speech dictation. May I ask, what like app or system are you using?
I use, like, naturally speaking, I use Apple's speech dictation. I can't say her name right now because if you have "Hey, her name" hooked up to your cell phone, she will go off.
Okay, never mind. I mean, it's a speech dictation. I dig it.
So it's Apple's speech dictation, and people who are on the Apple ecosystem know exactly who or what I'm talking about. And then I use naturally speaking.
Great. That's so cool. Man, I love that there are resources like that. I just found a new transcription service online called Live Transcription. And I thought it was just to get a transcription of a conversation, like for a podcast, but it's actually there to help deaf people. And I was like, oh, this is great. Like, it's a real-time thing so that, like, the deaf person can, like, type out a question and then you can respond by speaking and it'll come out in text so that that person can hear. And I was like, or can know what you're saying to them. And I was like, oh my God, what a great app. I just thought that was fascinating. It unfortunately does not save the transcripts, but it's helpful for that community.
So yeah, it's helpful for that community. And
it was built for that community. Who knows how it'll change.
Something I need to do for the deaf community because I'm a terrible disabled podcaster when it comes to that. I don't do well with blind. I don't do well with the deaf. And I barely do well with the cerebral palsy community. So, yeah.
So what part of writing is really the most exciting for you? Like, how do you keep the creative juices flowing? We all hit a wall sometimes. Sometimes we're like stuck. We don't know how to come up with ideas. Not everybody's got 10 books under their belt, okay? So, but I'm assuming at some point you hit a wall. You don't know what to do. You don't know what to talk about. How do you get out of that? What's your method?
I get out of that by just moving on to the next project, or I get out of that by concentrating on my journalism homework, which is a little less creative, and believe it or not, that helps me with my spark in my creative side.
Yeah, that's great. That's a great point. I think sometimes we forget that we have the ability to do other things. Like some people, meaning like, you know, if you're sitting there trying to write a story, you know, you could do something else totally unrelated and that could potentially help. But even just, I like the idea of homework because like you have to do your homework. So like, I like the idea that, you know, you're obligated to do this one thing and the time that your brain is spent on that allows the creative part to rest. I need a hobby like that. I need a thing. I got my phone out at all times writing down different ideas for stuff. I don't write as much as you do, clearly. But at the same time, like, wow. There's certainly a lot to be said for this particular technique. Now I'm like, okay, what can I do to get me to focus on something else that's going to help me? Maybe? Yeah, all right. You got my creative juices going. I'm thinking about all sorts of things that I could do to help going. You're so good. You're so inspiring.
Well, that's the name of the game.
I guess it is. Do you, like, want to be inspiring to other people? Is that... I mean,
no.
Like, is there any part of you that,
no.
like, seeks it? No?
No.
You
no.
just want to live your own life, and it turns out that some people find that inspiring.
Yep.
That's probably good. I find that a lot of people that are, like, out there creating stuff or doing it seeking fame, and that can be a really tough thing to have as your end goal. You know?
So, I don't want to be inspiring.
You just want to be yourself.
I do.
Yeah. Yeah, I hear you. I hear you. There's a lot of pomp and circumstance to that. Who needs that kind of stuff, huh? But you do so much for other people. I mean, you're so altruistic. You're creating scenarios to, like, help people. Not only are you, you know, helping your friend have an outlet to do some talking, but, you know, you want to help the rest of us dress better. I dress terribly. I need your fashion column immediately.
Well, that's why I'm trying it. Maybe audio, because fashion columnists are hard to find.
Yeah, maybe. Who knows? You never know. I mean, the journalism world has got to be way different now than it was, you know, a few years ago. It used to be just like newspapers and magazines. Now there are websites. There's all sorts of stuff. You know, there's so many more opportunities to be had. I mean, I think. Perhaps I'm incorrect.
Today is the greatest day to be a content creator.
Content creator. How do you feel about that phrase?
How do I feel about that phrase? I mean, like it, because anyone, even if they get their shirt pulled off back in journalism school, Susie Q could be a citizen journalism and call herself a podcast creator or a YouTube creator. I mean, you see these kids opening up toys and making millions of pounds, thank you very much, in the UK. So content creator, my ass. Content creator, my foot.
Yeah, it is pretty wild. I mean, the internet gave us all a platform to have our creative needs met, and I find that it went a little insane.
Yep.
Oh, man. I mean, you know, podcasts, even that, there are so many of all of us just putting ideas out there. But I know that your podcasts are out there to help people, you know, maybe not directly there to help people, but they do help people. And then I'm always trying to talk to different artists, different people along the way who are unsure, you know, how to keep going, you know, when they have a rough time. And I think it's a really amazing thing. And thank you for sharing the story that it was a tragedy that inspired you to, like, get it done, to, like, get your first book written. And a lot of times that can hold people back. But it got you, it gave you the catalyst.
And I was going to say, on another note, my deepest regret was going into a low-paying teaching job, and I wouldn't recommend any millennial go into a low-paying teaching job. I wouldn't recommend the millennials behind me. Now, Grant, this is not a cheap option. Either go back to journalism school or go get your MFA.
What, that you mean creative people?
When you're a college student and you're deciding what to do, if you're creative enough, go into the creative field. Don't go into the education field like I did and stifle your creativity.
Oh, yeah, that held you back? Interesting.
Oh, yes, it did.
Interesting.
Oh, yes, it did. And I'm now coming out of what held me back, because I'm now in a supportive environment that actually supports the outside work that I do. And one of the philosophies at the private school where I work is the arts, academics, and the outdoors. It just helps me be a better person, knowing those philosophies. And of course, I've known those philosophies for 31 years plus now, because I was a student at F and Country Day.
What do you think your driving force is as a creative person? You've mentioned that you don't want to inspire people, but what drives you?
What drives me is just giving people the resources that I didn't have as a child. I barely had the ADA act on my side. I barely do still. And I giving resources back to the community that I did not have.
But it can't just be that. I mean, yes, you are doing that. And you're doing a great job of it. You have great, you know, resources that you've already provided and that you will continue to provide, I'm sure. But, like, you know, some of the other stuff that you do is more creative. You know, what drives you to do the interviews? What drives you to write your novels? Like,
I want to.
What do you
want
to communicate?
I honestly want to show people that people with challenges can do it and can be proven wrong.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. Because one of the biggest misconceptions out there is people with disabilities want to kill themselves, want to suicide. That's one of the biggest misconceptions. The other misconception is that people with disabilities don't hold a college degree. People with disabilities live on Social Security income, and people with disabilities can't hold a part-time job or full-time job. So I want to prove everyone wrong that people with disabilities can.
I'm going to try really hard to not say that that's inspirational.
Well, I don't want
when you're awesome.
If people think I am, that's great.
No, absolutely. Absolutely. You're a fighter. I like it. You're a tough cookie. You're super fun. I'm glad you're out there. It's good for the people.
Well,
it's good for you. I like listening to you. I enjoy your podcast.
And, oh, by the way, you guys, I think you need to go listen to Amy's podcast on Ask When.
Oh, yeah? There you go.
Did I mention that I interviewed the fabulous Amy on Ask When? And did I mention that? I gave Amy a plug. And I got Amy out of the woodwork just a little bit because I asked her if she had a dream comedian that she wanted, or a dream creative that she wanted to interview. And we both have our dream comedians, but they still haven't said yes to us.
Oh, you know what? I actually got a little bit closer to the possibility of Alan Alda. I met somebody I met somebody who took classes at his institute in New York. And so I was like, cool, can you help me take one of those classes? Can you connect me with whoever teaches those classes so I can go up there and take one and maybe meet him? So, yeah.
How cool is that?
So I'll keep an eye out for you and Mark Maron as well. If I see any inns, I'll try to get in there.
Have any inns in Second City or any inns in the comedy world, because Mark Maron, who does WTF, which he proudly states on this podcast, and he begins it with walk the doors. He should begin it with walk the doors and put your headphones in, Mr. Monkman. And so he is a prolific interviewer in himself. And he did a fabulous interview with Barack Obama. See, I couldn't remember the name. See, that's what happens. Brain fog and CP mix well. And so he did a fabulous interview with Barack Obama. And if you guys want to go back to listen to that one, it's maybe still public on its feed. The reason why I say that is because Monk Man put half his feed out and then half his feed behind a paywall. So I don't know what happened to that episode now, but he did a fabulous job. Just Google Monk Man and Barack Obama. That's how you'll find it, you guys.
You love that, huh? That's your favorite. Do you listen to WTF all the time, or was it just the Obama episode that really got you going?
I I do on the occasion when I really need a raunchy, okay, put me out of my misery podcast. Big man is a so prolific interviewer, and at the beginning, as I said, he said, lock the doors, or he has his voiceover artist said, lock the doors, and I'm like, okay, this is my out of experience episode, and on occasion, he makes me laugh, so I'm like, okay, that's what I just needed.
Yeah, he's pretty great. But you're right, he's got an attitude, for sure. You have to be in the mood to deal with his negativity, for sure. I'm often like, okay, wow.
And you also have to be in the mood to deal with Gary Vaynerchuk's. Hey, Gary Vaynerchuk in the Audio Experience. I was listening to that one the other day, and I'm like, okay, Gary, enough of you. I love you as a pick-me-up. I love Monk Baron as a pick-me-up. But, okay, those two have strong attitudes.
Absolutely.
Those two put together have strong attitudes.
I think it's important to have a strong point of view when you are doing your podcast. You have a strong point of view showing everybody, see, I can do this. Screw you for your weird ideas and your misconceptions. And hopefully I'm doing a pretty good job as well, talking to a bunch of people saying, it's okay. Don't let the people that told you you got your theater degree or your creative writing degree or your journalism degree that wasn't good enough. No. Here are lots of opportunities available for you.
Yeah, no.
When you're great, you're wonderful.
I am not.
It's not that I'm inspired by you. It's just that I think you're a fun lady, and I enjoy chatting with you and listening to you on the interwebs. And, you know, I just look forward to all the exciting adventures that you have in the future. So thank you so much for being.
When I get the publishing deal, Amy, and when I get Monk Man, you will be the first one to know. Because I announced that with you, and you got to text me when you get Ellen Aldon.
Oh, yeah, I will.
Yeah, because
heck yeah.
You put it out on the Ask Linda podcast, and I'll listen to that the day that comes out.
If anybody's listening and they have connections to Alan Alda or Mark Maron, get in touch with us.
Let us know.
Let us know. I won't even take Mark Maron from you. I will let you have it.
No. let Mark Maron be my first podcast, your second, because he's an incredible podcaster. And we wish Alan Alda had a podcast.
He does.
Alan Alda have a podcast?
Yeah, he does. He has a podcast. It's only on Apple, so it's hard, but like, you know, people and like it's hard to access, like it's not everywhere.
Okay.
But he does have one here. Hold on, I'm just going to look it up. I've never Googled anything, but I'm going to Google it right now. It's called Clear and Vivid.
Okay.
And it's about communication, because that's what his school is. That's what in New York is about, communication.
That's what I need right now. I need Alan Alda's communication skills right now.
Yeah. I'll send you the link.
So I appreciate you guys. And you guys can, I hang out on Twitter. You guys can listen to Ask Lynn, go back and listen to Amy's episode, obviously. And then we have some fascinating people on Ask Lynn, and it's going to get more fascinating as soon as they exit journalism. It's going to push the education of Bach off a cliff. And then, And so it's going to get, welcome to Mr. Toad's Wild Ride of a disabled journalist trying to do her work.
You're great. Thank you so much for being on the podcast.
Thank you so much for
being a great guest. And, you know, just it's a wonderful thing to I don't know that I've talked to many journalists. I mean, you're a novelist, too. But, like, it's just a great thing to share with my audience. Different people who are interested in creative careers, here is one that I think you might be my first example of. And I'm so glad. Here's a new thing you can do, guys. Sky's the limit for you. Good luck, everyone.
Just do it.
Thanks for listening to Yes But Why Podcast. Check out all our episodes on yesbutwhypodcast.com or check out all the content on our network, HC Universal, at hcuniversalnetwork.com.